Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.6, the killing of the demon Putana. 10.6.32. Okay. Nunam patarshi sanjato. Yogeshu vasamasaktaha. Svaeva jisto hi ut pato. Yad ananka dumpadubhai. That's a tongue twister. Nunam partarshi sanjato. Yogasho vasamasa sahi. Saeva jisto hi utpato. Yad ahanakan dundut bihi. Nunan patarshi sanjato. Yigesho vasamasa sahi. Saeva jisto hi utpato. Yadahan kadunbate. Antarsh sanjato. Yugeshu asaha. Saeva jisto hi utpato. Yadahan kadundudabhi. Nan vatarsi sanjato. Yogesho vasamasa saha. Seva jisto hutpato. Yarana kandundu dobihi. Marajis. Nanam vatarsi sanjato. Yugesho vasamasa saha. Seva jisto hi utpato. Yadahan kadidumbihi. Nunam batarsi sanjato. Yugesho vasamasa saha. Seva jisto hit pato. Yarahanka kudumda bihi. Nunan batarsi sanjato. Yogesha vasa masa saha. Seva jisto hit pato. Yadahanka dundu bihi nanum nunam. Certainly. Bata. Oh, my friends. Rishi. Great saintly person. Sanjataha. Has become. Yoga Ishaha. A master of mystic power. Va. Or. Samasa. Has become Saha. He, Vasudev, Saha. That, Eva, indeed, Drista, has been seen by us. He, because Utpataha, kind of disturbance, Yat, that which, Aha, predicted. Anakadundabahi. translation and purport. By His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nanda Maharaj and the other gopis exclaimed, "My dear friends, you must know that Anakundadabhi Vasudev has become a great saint or a master of mystic power. Otherwise, how could he have foreseen this calamity and predicted it to us?" Purport. This verse illustrates the difference between Kshatriyas and innocent Vaishyas. By studying the political situation, Vasudev could see what would happen, whereas Nanda Maharaj, the king of the agriculturists, could only guess that Vasudev was a great saintly person and had developed mystic powers. Vasudev actually had all mystic powers under his control, otherwise he could not have become the father of Krishna. But, in fact, he foresaw the calamities in Braj by studying Kamsa's political activities and thus warned Nanda Maharaj to take precautions. Although Nanda Maharaj thought that Vasudev had predicted this incident through wonderful mystic powers. By mystic powers, gained through the practice of Hatha Yoga, one can study and understand the future. Translation. Nanda Maharaj and the other gopis exclaimed, "My dear friends, you must know that Anakundadabhi Vasudev has become a great saint or a master of mystic power. Otherwise, how could he have foreseen this calamity and predicted it to us?" Offer my humble obeisances to the lotus feet of my spiritual master, who's opened my eyes blinded by the darkness of ignorance with the torchlight of knowledge. So the first thing that I noticed when I read this verse was that I continue to have a very bad memory. And that can be a great boon, to have a bad memory, because you don't remember all the bad things. On the other hand, you don't remember a lot of the good things. And but having not such a good memory, I read the verse in the purport and went, "I didn't know that about Vasudev. Vasudev had all these he was a political strategist, you know." And of course, in today's electrified era of American politics, you know, you think to yourself, "Oh my gosh, you know, he was really tuned in." But when you think about what he would have learned, having been jailed by Kamsa for all those years, and knowing the mentality of his brother-in-law, he obviously got wind of much of the political currents. That wasn't too difficult to figure out, that Kamsa was very much afraid that the eighth son was going to kill him. And so anyone born in any land near Mathura, was any son born, was going to perhaps be in danger. Not only that, but Vasudev had carried Krishna across the Jamuna, placed him in the lap of Mother Yashoda, and returned without the knowledge, of course, of anyone there. So he was privy to a lot of the intrigue, knowing that Krishna had appeared in that form of a baby, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and yet he had to go back and kind of keep it all to himself, because he didn't want to let anyone know, other than his dear wife, Devaki, that Krishna was alive and well, and he had brought back Yogamaya with him to the jail cell. We all know that story pretty well, I think. So, you know, I go, okay, well, that's, what else do I know about Vasudev? And I really didn't know a lot when I started to think about it, because what really struck my mind was that each of these characters have much more depth to it than just some superficial activities that when you sketch their life, as we tend to do, or I tend to do anyway, we leave out the nuances of their characteristics. I had no idea, really. I didn't remember that Vasudev had been a minister, for example. And so what I did was, he was very politically, he had a lot of political acumen. He was experienced. And not only that, it was very striking to me in this purport that Prabhupada described Nanda Maharaj as a great, you know, agriculturist, and that his, you know, that Vasudev was this, you know, much the Kshatriya who actually, I didn't even realize you. I always thought, you know, I used to get Vyasadev and Vasudev mixed up. That's how bad my mind works. So, you know, finally, when I figured that out a few years ago, you know, I began to make distinctions, and I began to realize, you know, I have to approach these personalities as unique individuals because we are, you know, studying from the personal point of view. So I began to use what is a great tool, if you don't have it, is the Vanipedia. And Vanipedia allows you to go into depth on the characters that or any subject, because once you begin to go deep, it's not like the, it's unlike the folio in that it references and continues to reference deeper and deeper until you get an entire context of something. So I did that with Vasudev. I wanted to share some of the selections that I got because it opened my eyes to the personality, to his relationships, to the fact that he, you know, he was tied very deeply to the families of the day, of that time. And right up through the Kurukshetra War and through the war and beyond. So let me read a few things. And I'm going to then about save about 20 minutes at the end, because some people asked if I would give a little thumbnail of my experience with Indradyumna Swami and going to Mount Kailash. So I want to do the Bhagavatam class as it's classically done. But then I'd like to, with your permission, share a little bit about that experience of going to Tibet and being with some very wonderful Vaishnavas there. Would that be okay? Though there were four words I learned many years ago when I was in Chaupati Temple that seemed to have a lot of power behind them. And those four words, if those of you have been there probably know that, those four words there, shall I go on? Shall I go on? And Radhana Swami, you know, he goes on these long lectures, you know, and then you think, finally, you know, I get a bathroom break, but nope. Shall I go on? So I may use that at some point. All right. So I kind of want to read some things, and I think you're all going to find it of great interest because a lot of things that I didn't know, perhaps you're more well studied than I am, but let's see. I'll give the references. They're all from the Bhagavatam or from the Krishna book, different places. Through Marisa, King Sura begot Vasudev, Devabhaga, Devarsraya, Anaka, Srinjaya, Samaka, Kanka, Samika, Vasaka, and Vrika. These 10 sons were spotless, pious personalities. When Vasudev was born, the demigods from the heavenly kingdom sounded kettle drums. And therefore, Vasudev, who provided the proper place for the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, was also known as Anakadundabi. That's where the word comes from. It's another name of Vasudev. In the Krishna book, Prabhupada writes about their previous lives prior to taking birth as Devaki and Vasudev. At that time, my name was Prasnagarbha. In the next millennium, you took birth. That was Krishna speaking. In the next millennium, speaking to Vasudev and Devaki, you took birth as Aditi and Kashyapa, and I became your child of the name Upendra. At that time, my form was just like a dwarf, and for this reason, I was known as Vamadev. I gave you the benediction that I would take birth as your son three times. The first time I was known as Prishnagarbha, who was speaking, born of Prishni and Sutapa. In the next birth, I was Upendra, born of Aditi and Kashyap. And now, for the third time, I'm born as Krishna, from you, Devaki, and Vasudev. On hearing the prayers of Devaki, the Lord replied, my dear mother, in the millennium of Svayambhuvamanu, my father Vasudev was living as one of the Prajapatis. I'll just stop for a minute. When I read these purports, there's so much in the purport. And you tend to, at least I do, I tend to want to just focus in on one thing
because there's so many things in that purport. So in this case, what attracted me was to focus in on Vasudeva. I really didn't know so much about him. I mean, although I've been, you know, I hear it, it just goes out the other ear usually. So if maybe you'll join this journey with me to discover Vasudeva's personality. So let's see, where was it? Oh, yes. By practicing, so at that time when Lord Brahma was desiring to increase the population, he requested you to generate offspring. You controlled your senses and performed severe austerities. This is the same personality that was Vasudeva's now in his previous lives. By practicing the breathing exercises of the yoga system, both you and your husband could tolerate all the influences of the material laws, the rainy season, the onslaught of the wind, the scorching heat of the sunshine. You also executed all religious principles. In this way, you were able to cleanse your heart and control the influences of the material laws. In executing your austerity, you used to eat only the leaves of the trees which fell to the ground. Then with steady mind and controlled sex drive, you worshiped me, desiring some wonderful benediction from me. Both of you practiced severe austerities for 12,000 years. By the calculation of the demigods. During that time, your mind was always absorbed in me. And when you were executing devotional service and always thinking of me within your heart, I was very much pleased with you. O sinless mother, your heart is therefore always pure. At that time also, I appeared before you in this form just to fulfill your desire, and I asked you to ask whatever you desired. This is, he's addressing to Devaki, who's not Devaki in that life. At that time, you wished to have me born as your son. Although you saw me personally, instead of asking for your complete liberation from material bondage, under the influence of my energy, you asked me to become your son. In other words, to appear in the material world, the Lord selected his mother and a father. So he selected Prishni and Sutapa perpetually as his mother and father. And on account of this, neither Prishni nor Sutapa could ask the Lord for liberation. Liberation is not so important as the transcendental loving service of the Lord. There it is. Prabhupada brings it right back home. You know, we are not seekers of mukti. And he does this time and time again. Though there are places where people say, you know, make this your last birth. You know, take advantage of this form of human life. You know, there are those suggestions that Prabhupada gives. The inner life of his message is to just become completely dedicated to the service of the Lord, liberation or not. The Lord could have awarded Prishni and Sutapa immediate liberation, but he preferred to keep them within this material world for his different appearances, as will be explained in the following verses. On receiving the benediction from the Lord to become his mother and father, Prishni and Sutapa retired from the activities of austerity and lived as husband and wife in order to beget a child who was the Supreme Lord himself. In due course of time, Prishni became pregnant and gave birth to the child. The Lord spoke to Devaki and Vasudeva. At that time, my name was Prishnigarbha. In the next millennium, you took birth as Aditi and Kashyapa, and I became your child of the name Upendra. At that time, my form was just like a dwarf, and for this reason I was known as Vamanadeva. I gave you the benediction that I would take birth as your son three times. And now for the third time, I'm born as Krishna from you. I appeared in this Vishnu form just to convince you that I'm the same Supreme Personality of Godhead again taken birth. I could have appeared just like an ordinary child. But in that way, you would not have believed that the Supreme Personality of Godhead had taken birth in your womb. My dear father and mother, you've therefore raised me many times as your child with great affection and love, and I'm therefore very much pleased and obliged to you. And I assure you that this time you shall go back home, back to Godhead, on account of your perfection in your mission. I know you are very concerned about me and afraid of Kamsa. Therefore, I order you, take me immediately to Gokula and exchange me for the daughter who's just been born to Yashoda. Having spoken thus to his father and mother, the Lord turns himself into an ordinary child in their presence and remains silent. Isn't that cool? I think that's really, you know, kind of very interesting. Okay, so then, I'm not going to read them all, but there's just some such interesting things here. Okay, from the Krishna book. When Vasudeva met with Nanda Maharaj, it was a very interesting meeting. He asked some very interesting questions, and it reveals a lot about his duties, his position, and his personality. It's also significant that Vasudeva inquired about the welfare of Nanda Maharaj's animals. The animals, and especially the cows, were protected exactly in the manner of one's children. Vasudeva was a Kshatriya, and Nanda Maharaj was a Vaishya. It's the duty of the Kshatriyas to give protection to the citizens, and it's the duty of the Vaishyas to give protection to the cows. The cows are as important as the citizens. And just as the human citizens should be given all kinds of protection, so the cows should be given full protection. The purport of this expression by Vasudeva is this. Although he had 8 sons born in the womb of Devaki, unfortunately, they were all gone. He could not even keep his one son, Krishna, with him. Vasudeva was feeling his separation, but he could not express the real fact. Please, tell me about the welfare of Vrindavan, he said. You have many animals. Are they happy? Are they getting sufficient grass and water? Also, let me know whether the place where you are now living is undisturbed and peaceful. This inquiry was made by Vasudeva because he was very anxious about Krishna's safety. He knew that Kamsa and his followers were trying to kill Krishna by sending various kinds of demons. They had already resolved that all the children born within 10 days of the birthday of Krishna should be killed. Because Vasudeva was so anxious about Krishna, he inquired about the safety of his residence. He also inquired about Balaram and his mother Rohini, who were entrusted to the care of Nanda Maharaj. Of course, Rohini, as we know, and we'll read again, was another wife of Vasudeva. Wife of Vasudeva had 16 wives, and Rohini was one of them. And she was living as the taking care of Krishna with Mother Yashoda. It's all in the family. What's so interesting to me as I read this is that, you know, you see this concern on the part of Vasudeva, but he can't tell what's really going on. He's got to keep it in. It's probably like just, he can't, it's like wanting to burst out of him, you know. By the way, that's my son. I want you to take really good care. But he can't. What an austerity. It reminds me sometimes of the different stories of mothers that have sacrificed themselves for their children. There's a great story in the Bible about the king, was it Solomon? Yeah, King Solomon was presented. One woman said, the child is mine. Another one said, no, the child is mine. You know the story? And then King Solomon had to make a decision. Whose child was it? So he said, well, I can't figure out whose child this is, so I'm just going to take my sword, and he pulls it out, and I'm just going to cut the child in half and give you each half the child. And one mother said, no, don't do that. Give her the child. And immediately King Solomon knew who was the real mother, wasn't it? Because she couldn't bear to see her child killed. So similarly, you can imagine. Just imagine. And again, you start to get inside, in a little way at least, the kind of austerities that people have to go through and that Vasudeva went through. He also inquired about Balaram and his mother Rohini, who were entrusted in the care of Nanda Maharaj. Vasudeva also reminded Nanda Maharaj that Balaram did not know his real father. He knows you as his father. And now you have another child, Krishna, and I think that you're taking very good care of both of them. Vasudeva was a Kshatriya, Nanda Maharaj was a Vaishya. So he continued to say that the maintenance of religious principles, economic development, and the satisfactory execution of meeting the demands of the senses depend on cooperation among relatives. Interesting. Because everybody's supposed to take care of everybody else. And nations and all humanity. Sorry, relatives, nations, and humanity. Therefore, it is everyone's duty to see that his fellow citizens and the cows are not put into difficulty. One should see to the peace and comfort of his fellow man and the animals. Sometimes we think, oh, you know, this is material, but it's important, actually, to give peace and comfort to the animals and other human beings. It doesn't say devotees. So the development of religious principles, economic development, and sense gratification can then be achieved without difficulty. It's very interesting that there's a statistic that in America, a family of four, if you make, you know, there's a saying of more money, more happiness, people think that's true, but they did a study, they being, you know, some psychologist somewhere with some money to make a research on it. And they found out that a family of four in today's world, once they make $75,000 as a gross income, they don't increase their happiness making money beyond that amount because your basic needs are covered. At 75, you got a place to live, you got food on the table, you got enough for your bus fare and, you know, a couple of movies a month. So they found out that this idea that money buys happiness is a little bit true because you have to have enough to not be in anxiety where your next meal is coming from. But beyond that, you don't buy any more happiness searching after more money. You know, that's just, it's a myth. But you do need a certain amount. And this is substantiated in this, not purports from the Krishna book, in this commentary by Srila Prabhupada. The development, Vasudeva expressed a sorrow due to not being able to give protection to his own sons born of Devaki. He was thinking that religious principles, economic development, and the satisfaction of the senses were therefore all lost. So he was pretty, you know, he was suffering. What time is class supposed to be over? 8:15, class is over? Gosh, I thought I had till 9 o'clock. Okay. Shall I go on, or shall I tell you about the trip to Kailash? Okay. So I shouldn't go on. All right, Kailash. Or in the words of the videographer Ananta Brindavan, you've seen, and many of you have probably seen his videos. Ananta Brindavan's made all of Indrajuna Maharaj's videos, and they're pretty magnificent. But they're pretty magnificent. Anyway, this guy is indefatigable. I've never seen anybody work so hard, sleep less. I mean, he's really an amazing person. Physically, just this Russian bear, you know, who happens to be an Australian citizen now. But whenever he would get really tired, and you got tired up in those altitudes pretty fast, he would all of a sudden, to the whole group of us, there was 11 of us left, he said, "Kailash! Kailash! Kailash!" He'd wake us all up. We'd get going again. You know, he's just like, so he's putting together a documentary on the experience. But I had written a possible script for them. I don't know that they'll use it. So I'm going to read a little bit from that script. I'll tell you first a little bit. The organization just came up suddenly. I wanted to go, because I'd gone to Muktinath with Indrajuna Maswami some 17 years ago, and I was anxious to renew my connection with him. I have a certain penchant for adventure. I like adventure. I wanted to get out. I wanted to get to the mountains. I wanted the silence that comes, you know, being high in the Himalayas. There was something in me. I just needed that. And then I tried to get out of it because one of my friends wasn't going, but I couldn't get up, and it was also much more expensive than I thought it was going to be. So because you require a guide, your group has to have a guide. There's a lot of Chinese regulations. I don't want to get into it. It's not very spiritual, but it is it's a hassle. It's a hassle to take. They weren't even giving permits 3 years ago, But now they started giving some permits to Westerners. So anyway, I was, I saw, you know, okay, Christians arranging, I have to go. Because once you're on that group visa, if they take anybody off the group visa, they have to redo the whole visa again. So I was kind of locked in. My friend didn't go, and I was, all of a sudden, I joined this group of people. I hardly knew any of them except for Buttahari and Chaturatma joined us. And everybody else was Maharaj's disciple or friends of his. And so I kind of felt a little bit of much of an outsider and joined them. And we went to Kathmandu to have a day of getting everything set. And then we got on the plane the next morning to what we thought was going to be landing in Lhasa an hour and 15 minutes later. Just to give you a little background really quickly, the astrologers of Maharaj, or some friend who was an astrologer, he doesn't have a, like, you know, astrologer on hire, said this was not a good time to go, this was not going to be auspicious, this was, you know, not very good thing to do. So he wrote everybody, said, you know, maybe we shouldn't go to Mount Kailash, we should just hang around Lhasa, go to some monasteries. And everybody wrote back, including myself, we're not going unless we're going to do that kora, that circle around, it's no, you know, why spend all that time and money and energy? So then he said, okay, we'll do it. So immediately, when we got on the plane and we were flying, you know, halfway to Lhasa, about 45 minutes into the flight, they say, oh, we're diverting the flight. You know, over two hours away to Chengdu, and nobody knew why. And it turned out that the weather was fine in Lhasa. They just had Chinese government strange. They just do things, and you learn very quickly. Don't ask why in China. It's just not a good thing to do. Not healthy for your material life to ask why. And so right away we knew that it wasn't going to be an easy trip, because now we were delayed one day. And even after we went to Lhasa, we had a flight out of Lhasa that took us. It's a very, very big country. It's just a region now of China. It's very big. It takes well over 2 hours to fly from one end of Tibet, not even to the other end of Tibet. So you can imagine, it's pretty big. You know, it's like from here to, practically from here to Kansas City. So they canceled our flight. So we had to hire, you know, again, our cut short, hire a couple of vans and our tour guides, and we had to drive 2 17-hour days across the country to get to this place, Darchen, which is at the place of the beginning of the trailhead of the Kora. And so, you know, it's beautiful, but it's, you know, it gets a little monotonous. Not much grows up there. It's you're always at about 14, 15,000 feet. And the only beauty of it is you start to get to know the people in the van, because there's some wonderful devotees there. And we had one woman who, Sardia Rasa, a Russian girl, woman who's back in Russia. She's in charge of 600 employees. So this woman was our liaison for everything. She put the whole thing together. And when I'm going to make this really quick because I know I only got like four or five minutes. But when we got to Darchen, finally, having gone over some pretty high passes, one of our members who was he was training for a triathlon. And on the day we started out on the Kora, which is a 2.5-day trek around the mountain, he was hallucinating even after a few steps out of the hotel. So we left him behind with the guide because the trail is pretty well worn. And you can see where you're going. He could meet us. Because the first night you stay in these sheds on the side of the mountain. And we were about 5 kilometers into this, and again, you know, these words of the astrologer keep coming back, you know, it's going to be inauspicious. And he was already in very deep trouble. He was trembling, his symptoms were, the guide was taking him to the hospital. So Maharaj made a very smart decision. He said, okay, we're going back. So we retraced our steps back to, you know, back down the mountain, back to Darchen. And sure enough, one of our members had been stricken very badly with altitude sickness. It's called apoxia. You don't know who's going to get it. The oldest members didn't get it. The youngest and strongest of us did get it. It's a very, you can be two or three hours from death because water fills up your lungs, and water had started to fill up his lungs. So they stabilized him, fortunately, at the hospital, and we had to make arrangements with the Chinese embassy, the Russian embassy, the Nepalese embassy, to get him to the border, because they wouldn't let any helicopters fly in. You got to get a person with hypoxia to a lower altitude. And there's no lower altitudes in Tibet. It's all, you know, rooftop of the world and up. So that taken care of, there was a whole drama at the border. They tried to rake us through the coals. It cost a lot of money to fly him back to Kathmandu. I had gotten trip insurance just for that reason, because I knew that if there was a problem, that was going to be expensive. But the next day, we started out without two of our members. Two of the video crew were now gone. And that first day, we got up to the first site, and that's where you'll see some pictures of us at the mountain doing our dandavats. There are many different places along the way of pilgrimage. You're right near Manasarovar, which is made from the mind of Lord Brahma, one of the most beautiful high-altitude lakes you'll ever see, full of different pastimes. Also, there's lakes up where we were, where Parvati, for example, did all her austerities. She now takes bath there. We were looking for the banana trees. We were looking for the groves of the Kadamba flowers. We were looking for all that because that's how the abode of Lord Shiva is described. But we saw it only through the eyes of Scripture. That was our vision. However, Maharaj, I'm really speeding through this now. There was so much drama going on. But deep inside each person, there was this realization that we were on the path of many this ancient path of many yogis and rishis and Vyasadeva and others who had taken that road around this place. Believe it or not, I didn't know it, but there was called Ravana Tal. It's a lake that is visible from some of the places we were at. That's where Hiranyakashipu did all of his austerities and received the boon for Lanka from Shiva. I mean, all this stuff happened there. And, you know, this is a place of great pilgrimage for Hindus. It's a place for Buddhists. They hold that mountain sacred. It's a place of pilgrimage for bulls. Bulls are the original religious practices of Tibetans before Buddhism came in the 6th century. So there's a lot of people going around that mountain, two of the three going one direction and one of the three going the other direction. And unfortunately, there's a lot of litter now on that path because it's just, you know, they don't understand at this stage. They hopefully will. But we had a lot of realizations. I mean, we hit a snowstorm on the second day going up over the 18,000-foot pass. We all got separated. I didn't see anybody any from our group for about eight, nine hours of walking. And it was a blinding snowstorm. That one day, the 2 days that we got delayed made the difference between summer and winter. That's how fast winter comes there. So that second night, we were huddled in a tin can, which they call, you know, the kind of a cabin. It's unheated, and, you know, there were six of us. It was just, you know, hoping the body heat would keep it warm enough. And so you perform these austerities. You take, for what? Because you could do the same thing by going around Gopeshwara in Vrindavan, the place of Lord Shiva. There's a lot of pastimes of Lord Shiva when he came to see Krishna in Vrindavan. You know, he was rejected by Mother Yashoda because he had all these matted locks and she was afraid of him. But he wouldn't give up, and he would stay in the garden waiting to see the baby Krishna. It's a wonderful pastime when you read how Shiva is, you know, really so dedicated to just getting a darshan of the Lord. What to speak of being able to serve the Lord. He's really, you know, I didn't realize much about Shiva. I had to study the fourth canto, really, you know, listen to the prayers, the pachettas. I think the only way that I learn about Krishna consciousness is either doing a film about it or kind of, you know, having to give a lecture about it or being in some kind of pastime about it. You know, some of us are very, very slow learners. I'm a very slow learner. So I have to kind of get immersed in it. I mean, all this morning, I've only read you a few of these wonderful descriptions. It's so cool when you start to dig deep, because all of a sudden you realize, oh, this is full of personality. this is much deeper than I thought. This is much more interesting. You know, it's not caricatured. Krishna consciousness is very, as I mentioned in the beginning, very nuanced. All the people have different motivations, every single one of them. So, similarly, I'll end this quick thumbnail of our trip to the chorus saying, don't do it, it's very dangerous. I did it because of a certain amount of desire for pratishta, you know. I wanted some, oh yeah, I did that, you know, and I knew only a few people would do it. But at the same time, it does have its value. It did give its value to me. I learned a lot from, actually Lord Shiva gave me a lot of mercy there. Maharaj committed of rot that he wasn't going to be watching any more social media unless it was related to Krishna consciousness. No more news on the internet. He promised to, you know, to Lord Shiva that his practice from this point forward would be devoid of that kind of need for material sense gratification on the subtle level. So he had a lot of realization. That was just one of his vows that he shared with us. And everybody who went on it, I think, came out, all those people that I felt no connection with, I felt a very deep connection with after those 10 days together and helping each other and living through those austerities. And I got a great opportunity to learn and to know about Chaturatma much more. He's really fun, really deep devotee. So is Badahari, of course, Maharaj, and all these other people. I mean, they're just, it's amazing. It's just amazing. And we have a society that's got such gems in it. We just need to discover each other more. That's all. And that's what I found, that we have to become much more personal with each other. And then maybe we'll actually begin to understand Krishna better. Thank you very much for listening. Please excuse all my offenses. Hare Krishna. Some video is, but he's got a documentary with interviews and everything is supposed to be coming. Thank you.